This show furnished by Key Light Counseling Center.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program that meets your specific needs? Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by medical addiction specialist Dr. Damon Raskin and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gluss, Concierge Detox LA will design an individualized program to meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712.
Although you'll be receiving valuable advice from our host, please remember this is not therapy. It does not replace a relationship with a qualified mental health professional.
I am Dr. G with Dr. Damon Raskin, and we are here on The Solution, and we like to look at issues from both a psychological and a medical point of view. And what we're going to be discussing tonight is really discussing the question of, should addicts be treated or punished? And with that, I'm going to start with my little inspiration about why I decided to do this show. And it's something I had discussed with Dr. Rask, and we both felt that it was very appropriate, was I had a close friend, and he was an attorney, and he was going through this time where he was basically partying a lot. And he had transported some cocaine over, he had mailed it to a place where he was going to I see one of my guests is already looking at me going, I'm definitely going to be talking about this. He had transported it to where the party was going to be, and when he got there, he actually, to the hotel, he got arrested. And because that was considered a federal offense, he ended up having to serve some time, and he was an attorney. And with that, he became sober and has been outspoken about his recovery. But what happened is that he got, because of the way our system is set up, he became a felon and got in a lot of trouble with his license and hasn't been able to reinstate it as an attorney. And it's basically drawn havoc to his life. And I think about it, and I think that this guy could do so much good. And a lot of times people who are recovering addicts or have made mistakes in their life are the best people out there who could inspire people to go into recovery. And unfortunately, he's not going to be able to, or it's still up for grabs, whether he's going to be able to ever practice again. And I was thinking about that and how our system is set up. And I wanted to just bring that in and discuss it with our panel. We'll start with that, about their feelings about what we're talking about. So let me introduce everyone. Well, of course, we've got my co-host, Dr. Damon Raskin. He's an internist and a addiction specialist. So I want to welcome him to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm always happy to be here.
And I'm always happy to have you on, especially since you are my partner on the show.
That is correct.
And my co-host. I have Dr. Nancy Irwin. She is a clinical psychologist like myself, but I don't know what I could say. Anyway, very, very smart woman, and she's also on staff at Seasons Recovery Center in Malibu. She's also the co-author of Breaking Through, Stories of Hope and Recovery. Nancy, I want to welcome you to the show.
Oh, pleasure to be here. Thank you.
And I have Todd Zeman Zalkins. He's an interventionist, author, filmmaker, public speaker, writer and producer of the documentary The Long Way Back, the story of Todd Zeman Zalkins. Todd, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. Glad to be here.
This is a very exciting panel to me, actually, because I think there's everyone from different aspects. And then we also have Dr. Ricky N. Bluthenthal. He's an associate dean of social justice and professor in the Department of Preventive Medicine and the Institute for Prevention Research at the Keck Medical School, USC. So, Dr. Bluthenthal, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
So I am going to kind of go around with my panel. I want to hear your reaction from your own professional standpoint about what my friend is going through, and what do you think it says about the question that we're engaging in, which is, should addicts be treated or punished, and your personal feelings about it. So let me start with Dr. Raskin.
Well, for me, it's an easy question because I see addiction as a medical disease. I see it as a similar disease as I treat hypertension, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or diabetes. These are chronic medical conditions that no one bats an eye that should be treated like any old medical condition. But when we're talking about an addiction, there's a lot of stigma around that. And people don't realize that the brain changes once an addict becomes addicted to whatever substance they're talking about. And it's not that they lose control, but the disease takes over. And unless they get the proper treatment, this is not something that should be punished like you would want to punish a diabetic if they don't take their insulin, right? You wouldn't put them in jail.
Yeah, and then what happens is because of the punishment, it adds so much shame to what he already
experienced. It just makes it all worse.
He can't go out and make the money he needs to make.
And I've had many patients in that same situation, by the way, and it really is a shame when they could be doing so much good once they get the proper treatment. And that's what I think is so important.
Yeah, you know, I could agree with you more. I'm going to go to Dr. Irwin. I see actually everyone is nodding their head and ready to jump in. So, Dr. Irwin, your thoughts?
Well, of course, I believe in treatment. And, you know, I've never met anyone who has chosen to be an addict of any sort. Usually, they're trying to escape some sort of pain. So I'm committed to treating and resolving the trauma behind the need to numb out to pain. Outside of the biological predisposition, of course, but usually there's a psychological need to escape pain. That's what I'm committed, and that takes the humanitarian aspect or standpoint and compassion.
And when you consider it a crime, I think what happens is that you just add to the pain that the person's already experiencing and make it so much more difficult for them to actually recover.
Yes, you compound the stigma and the shame with fear. And then you go nowhere. In fact, it sets them back.
And I know with my friend what's happening is, I've said this before already, that it's become next to impossible for him to actually go out and make a living. Mm. And so everything just gets compounded and, you know, the chances of relapse are so much higher, and it's this vicious circle. So, Todd, I know you've been chomping at the bit, so I'm going to ask you to jump in, and I want to hear your opinion.
I'm with everybody else. I'm a huge believer in outcome. Positive outcome, and incarceration is not treatment. Incarceration is not a form of treating the disease. It's a brain disorder, like the doctor commented on at first. And so I personally am in recovery, and I know that incarceration would not have saved my life. People do get sober in jail, but the statistics are far, they're far, far greater in a positive way for people who are in a treatment facility that can address their needs effectively.
Yeah, exactly. And I do want to tell our audience, if you want to call in, address myself or any of our panel, if you have a story to share or a question to ask, our number is 1-800-222-5222. That's
1-800-522-5222. And if you'd rather send an email, it's engage790@gmail.com.
And you did such a good job with that, Dr. Raskin. I'm very proud of you. And let me ask Dr. Bluthenthal to comment on what we've been talking about.
Yeah, let me just broaden the worldview a little bit. I mean, we have to concede that we spent 40 years, 50 years incarcerated, mostly low-income African-American Latino men and women for the same crimes that your friend engaged in. And as true as it is for him that the incarceration was debilitating to him, it's equally debilitating to those families and those individuals and communities. And it really is represented almost a social policy in reverse, where because of the kinds of policing that went on, and you ended up, you know, devastating whole communities for drug use that should have been with prison, where they should have received medical treatment instead. So it's a lot of people impacted, lawyers, but a lot more other people who were just starting their lives out. And we don't know what potential they might have, what they might have become, or what they might have been able to do, but for the fact that they spent their formative years incarcerated.
Yeah, I like what you're saying. This concept that it's basically a much wider scope than just that one person that's incarcerated. It affects everybody around them.
Yeah.
Our number again is 1-800-222-5222. If you want to call in, we'd love to hear your opinion. It's engage790@gmail.com. I'm going to ask my fellow psychologist to help me with this for a second. Mm-hmm. So what do you think is going on psychologically before we get into more in depth this that makes it so difficult for people to make that shift, when it comes to drugs or alcohol as criminal offense to a, as you said, a humanitarian issue, an issue of compassion and treatment?
Do you mean the public at large?
Yeah, because a lot of people just side with things like, well, you know, you do drugs, you need, and you're caught, you should go to jail for it.
I think these people have not had much experience. Their That's lives, a great way to put unbelievably, it. Have not been to throw a rock. Almost all of us have had someone in our family who has suffered from addictions. But I think a lot of people, you know, come across as holier than thou, and they think it's a weakness of character.
That's
and they
it.
Don't understand. It's much more complex than that. Again, no one chooses to be an addict.
And that's why we're here right now, is to shed some light on the complexity around the question of should addicts be treated or punished. And I know, Todd, you've talked about your own personal story a lot, about your experience about being an addict. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the question I just asked.
I feel strongly that there should be an equitable access for care. Despite one's financial circumstances, more often than not, when someone has all the resources behind them, he or she can not necessarily beat the system, but they're able to get treatment as opposed to incarceration. And so it's for economically challenged people are constantly being the ones who are sent off to jail. And I find that an absolute injustice. And so it should be fair and available to anyone who is suffering.
I couldn't agree with you more. And with that, we're going to go to commercial. I'm Dr. G. We're going to be right back. If you want to call in again, that number is
1-800-222-5222.
We'll be right back after the commercials.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program that meets your specific needs? Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by medical addiction specialist Dr. Damon Raskin and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Gloss, Concierge Detox LA will design an individualized program to meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712.
At Indeed, we believe a resume is a great way to see an overview of a candidate. But you're not hiring a resume, you're hiring a person. That's why Indeed offers tools that help bridge the gap between a candidate and the resume. Like skill tests, which let you actually see a candidate's abilities in action to make sure they're a good fit for the job. See beyond the resume with Indeed. Experience Indeed for yourself today and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting at Indeed.com/promo. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, guys? It's Elena, and we've all been waiting patiently for summer. It's finally here. So kick things off right and heat up your summer dating strategy with the Match app. Match has created millions of love stories. They've been number one in first and second dates, number one in marriages, and over 1 million babies made. Plus, the Match app gives you the chance to carefully review profiles versus just quickly flipping through them. You can now view photos and read more about the people you see, too. So download the Match app for free today.
Do you currently get regular structured settlement or annuity payments from an insurance company for a personal injury, auto accident claim, wrongful death, or inheritance? If so, you don't have to wait for months or even years to get the cash you need now to cover urgent expenses like debts, tuition, medical bills, or exciting events like a new baby or down payment on a home. With over 25 years experience, J.G. Wentworth, the country's leader in structured settlement purchasing, has helped thousands of people get the cash they need. Call today at 800-735-1600. We offer flexible options that pay you a lump sum of cash for a portion of your payments, ensuring you get the money you need now while still receiving future payments from your structured settlement or annuity. And unlike others, J.G. Wentworth is a direct funder and can streamline the process, helping you get the lump sum of cash you need faster. For your free cash now quote, call 800-735-1614. That's 800-735-1614. 800-735-1614.
Your opinions are at home here. AM 790 KABC.
You're listening to The Solution with Dr. G and Dr. Damon Raskin.
I'm Dr. G. And we are here with The Solution. And the question we're asking tonight is, should addicts be treated or punished? And we have a caller. His name is Mike from Riverside. So I'm going to bring him on, and I want to invite my panel to respond to his question. I will also respond. So let's bring him on right away. His name is Mike. And, Mike, you're calling from Riverside, so I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And, Mike, your question is that you did 6 years in prison for gambling addiction, and you want to ask the panel their thoughts about gambling addiction. Am I correct?
Correct, because a lot of what people think is the addiction is only chemically induced, but there is also the other kind of addiction where the chemistry in the brain is changed by the behavior of gambling.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That's an interesting question. Actually, Dr. Reskin, why don't you start?
Well, Mike, I completely agree with you. There are things called process addictions that are not just from alcohol or drugs, but from behaviors. And gambling is definitely one of them. Sex is another one. Even shopaholics, you can call them, or even food addiction can be seen as that. Even internet or technology addiction is something that we're seeing a lot lately. And they all have one thing in common, is that they all change pathways in the brain in the reward center that cause the stimulation of dopamine, which is a chemical that sort of creates this sort of reward, and we're looking for that high, that euphoria, that whatever the process is, whether it's gambling or drugs or alcohol, gives that same sort of feeling. So you're absolutely right that gambling addiction is very, very similar to what we're talking about with alcohol and drugs and opiates today.
You know, I actually wanted to ask Dr. Bluthenthal, when it comes to drug policies, do they also include these kind of process addictions, what Mike's referring to about being in jail for a gambling addiction?
To my knowledge, they don't. I mean, I don't know what Mike's specific circumstances are. You know, a lot of times things that people do in the interest of what their addictive behavior is can get them in trouble, and I suspect that's what happened with him.
Yeah,
but there aren't a great deal of allowances made for most of the other things that people do that can be addictive are not illegal.
Hey, Mike, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So, did you go to jail because you were actually like stealing to pay for gambling debts, or did something? I mean, something happened about that?
Yeah, after going gambling and losing my entire paycheck, I got a call from my wife that, don't come home unless you have money for the expenses.
Mm.
And I was looking at losing my family, so I got desperate. I'd been gambling all night. I hadn't slept. I made a really bad choice. I actually went into a place to steal some money.
Got it.
Yeah, and that's actually what Dr. Lupenthal is referring to, that a lot of times addictions can cause people to do illegal actions.
Absolutely.
So, Mike, listen, I want to thank you for sharing that thought and for being part of our solution family.
Thank you very much for letting me talk.
It's my pleasure. And,
you know, I think Mike brings up a good point, because what we're talking about is, you know, we're not sending people to prison because of their addiction. We're sending them because of some behavior that their addiction is then causing them to perform. So do they deserve to be punished for, you know, stealing or robbery or something like that because they have an addiction? Is that an excuse? I guess that's the question.
Actually, that's a great question to ask our panel, because he got arrested because of the stealing.
Right, not necessarily because of the addiction.
Right. Thoughts?
Well, what process addicts get addicted to is the intermittent reinforcement, whether it's sex or food or the gaming or the gambling. So sometimes the gambling can be one of the hardest ones to extinguish for that very fact. And Vegas has built a career on it. They seduce you literally in every way possible. And it's set up where that intermittent reinforcement, meaning you never know when you're going to win. And you get on that treadmill, you know you will at some point, whether it's 5 cents or $500, and it's very, very difficult to get off that. The same thing with sexual addiction, gaming, and all the other process addictions.
And I also think with substance or alcohol addiction too, because especially with substances, you know, you're chasing that high.
But that's self-administered, and you could be more in control of that. You're at the mercy of Vegas in the way it's set up. Or
that's
another
true.
Partner when it's a sex addiction.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a very interesting point.
But there is help.
Yes, there is help.
It can be very hard to extinguish. I don't mean to sound like a downer.
Yeah.
There certainly is help.
And
that
also
is
that
an
it
aspect.
Should be taken seriously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, Todd.
Well,
can I add one other thing real quick?
I don't want to lose the point that most of the other things that people in our society are addicted to are not punished by incarceration. So not sex. Not gambling, not workaholics. You know, I think the list is about 18 to 20 things at this point. Substances are one thing that we do put people in jail for, and have put, you know, millions of people in jail for their substance use alone. So we shouldn't lose sight of that. So
that's a great point. Why do you think that?
But we really were putting people in jail for you putting something in their body that we didn't want them to.
So why do you think that is? It's a great point that you bring up. Any thoughts around that?
Well, I mean, that's there's many books written on this topic. I mean, it's sort of, again, a social policy for our country. I mean, the folks who we've incarcerated for substance abuse are disproportionately African-American and Latino. And it fits a narrative in this country about how we treat problems in these low-income minority populations. You know, we haven't been putting people in jail for opiate misuse, even though opiate misuse at this point is the largest national drug use crisis that we've ever had. You know, tens of millions of people have been impacted by this, but you don't see people in jail for the simple misuse of opiates. That didn't happen with crack cocaine. That certainly didn't happen with heroin from our prior generation.
And is your point that it's mostly a Caucasian issue with opiate misuse?
Well, I think the point is that the way we treated the social problem of drug use among blacks and brown people was to put them in jail, and we haven't done that for white folks. I don't think our response to the opiate epidemic has been, our opiate crisis has been adequate at all. But one of the tools we haven't used is incarceration, and I think that's worth noting. Hmm.
And I do want to throw out our number again to our audience. It's 1-800-222-5222. If you want to call in, that would be the right number. You can also email us at engage790@gmail.com. I'm going to ask Todd to comment on this because, first, tell us a little bit about your story with opiate addiction. It's important for people to hear it.
Yeah, I was addicted to prescription painkillers for almost 17 years. It started innocently enough with a low back surgery that I had in 1990. It escalated like so many of the things do with the progression of this disease, which started, you know, it was Vicodin, Norco, then OxyContin and fentanyl. And, you know, if I was being judged or if I was going to be punished because of my personal usage, I'd be in San Quentin for the rest of my life. I think one of the things that we're missing here a little bit is that the crimes that are often associated with the misuse that can – they're punishable. Now, thank God I never went to prison, but I can tell you right now, we talked about this off air. Had I been sentenced to jail, I would have probably hung myself because of this, of the discomfort that lasted for months. There is no way I would have survived.
Are you talking about the physical discomfort?
I just think it'd be medicinally some type of, you know, medicines given for my detox, which lasted forever. And I can see how people do kill themselves from the agitation and the absolute psychosis they go through while they're going through the withdrawal period.
And it's usually attributed to depression of being sentenced and incarcerated. You make a great point. It could be more physical, biological.
Actually, that's a great question. And if anyone knows the answer, if someone goes into the prison system, do they go through a medical detox? Is that offered?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Cold turkey.
I got my answer.
Wow.
Every single person has responded, including everyone who's working on the show. Where are you, Dr. G? What university you live in?
Well, they probably go through that before the sentencing or shortly thereafter. So before they actually are remanded, then they probably have been detoxed.
So, Dr. Irwin, I want to ask you a question. We talked about this before, this Portugal. So I'm just going to say that one word to you, Portugal, and why don't you tell us why I'm bringing the name of that country up?
Absolutely. In the early 2000s, they began a program that is fair and treats addictions without punitive means, meaning they offer them treatment. And it was astoundingly rapid in the effectiveness. I think the cases of opiate deaths dropped something like 75%. Which is miraculous. And absolutely, I think we should begin to affect something like this in this country. There's no reason in God's earth why we shouldn't do that. To that point, this has worked beautifully. There's a program in Germany called Dunkelfeld, and it's for sex offenders, but it works the same way. And where other countries are using, we have a couple of outlets here that are doing it. And it's a different population, of course, but it comes from a place of, again, humanitarianism and compassion, allowing people to step out of the closet, if you will, stop the denial, the minimization, and get the help that they need. So it's a public health issue, not a criminal one.
And that's why they're talking about places where you can go to have safe intravenous use,
right.
Safe harbors where you can get clean needles, you can get help if you need it, and you don't get people that judge you. But yet there's still this resistance in this country for that. Why do you think that is?
Again, Todd? I think it's ignorance.
You know, we're so far behind, and I think that jail is just big business in our country. It's a huge business that's not going anywhere. And that model in Portugal has worked brilliant. I mean, people the addiction rate is actually lower, and the arrests for, relating to drug use is next to zero.
Yeah.
So go figure.
Yeah, actually, Dr. Luthenthal, can you comment on – are you aware of the policy in Portugal?
Yeah, I was just in Portugal for International Drug Policy Conference.
Wow.
I mean, I think that it's a very promising model. They comprehensive – well, A, they provide national health care for everyone, so that helps. And then in the context of that, you know, they're – instead of putting people into jails where they're not getting treatment, their lives are disrupted. Right. So their capacity to become earners or complete education or get new skills to get jobs are impeded 100%.
You know, we're going to break for a commercial, but I want to talk about it a little bit more when we get back. We also have a caller, Mark from Westwood. He has an interesting comment. I'm going to ask him to stay online and come back right after the commercials. I'm Dr. G. Our number is 1-800-222-5222, and we will be right back. I'm Dr. G.
I'm Dr. Raskin.
And we are here with a solution. Our question that we're asking tonight is, should addicts be treated or punished? Our call-in number is 1-800-222-5222. You can also email us at engage790@gmail.com. I'm going to start off this segment with a statement and question from Mark in Westwood. I'm going to ask my panel to feel free to address it if you would like to. So first, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, great show. Just as a highlight, I have a relative, a young man who he's okay, but he had a drug addiction problem and fortunately had some good legal representation, didn't commit any crimes, but he could have been one of those unfortunate like your client, the lawyer. But my thought is just after listening to the show is that I think doctors, by and large, are so well respected and influential from small communities, you know, up to, you know, any politician. Doctors have helped, you know, people on all levels that, you know, perhaps if it's not already afoot, you know, some local, statewide, nationwide movement, you know, in line with what you're all talking about to influence politicians might be helpful. And I think in the age of these, apparently they're prosecuting criminally the OxyContin, if I'm correct, some of the CEOs of some of these companies to put them in jail for, you know, knowingly, you know, addicting so many people and getting them killed on this drug. So, you know, the climate could be right to really get something going. And that was my thought.
I think it's a great thought. I'm going to ask my panel to address it. And Dr. Raskin, why don't you start off?
Yeah, no,
since our medical representation.
I would be all for working on getting doctors together to have some type of a statement and influence politicians on drug policy. But, you know, unfortunately, doctors don't have a lot of pull in a lot of different ways. If they did, I think we would have cheaper drug prices. I think we would have more people having options to get the help that they need. I think that there are so many people in this country that don't have healthcare still, despite what's going on, that it's a shame. And I think if doctors had their way, we would treat all comers. We would treat everyone the best we could. So that's, I think, a great idea in theory, and I would be all for it. But I still think that there are some powers that are, I would say, more influential than doctors right now.
Dr. Bluthenthal, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, that we, our approach to a lot of these problems isn't driven by what's the solution if this were my child, or if this was my spouse, or if this was my father. And until we have dialogues about these kinds of problems that are looking for real solutions, we're going to continue to end up in these dead ends where we want to punish people for behaviors that, you know, medically they're not going to get over, right? You know, it's like making diabetes illegal.
That's right.
You're not going to solve it by yourself. You need intervention and help. We have the tools. We have great new or not so new medications for particularly opiates that we don't make widely available now. So there's lots of opportunity to do this the right way. We're just choosing not to.
That's right.
You know, Todd, as someone who's had a personal experience with it, what are your thoughts about what Mark said about this idea of
doctors banding together?
Banding together.
First off, I believe it's less than 5% of all doctors that are really responsible for this crisis across the board. I mean, the majority of doctors were not overprescribing for decades. And, you know, as the former Surgeon General once, he's quoted as saying, this has been the great mistake of modern medicine, you know.
Right.
It's the big pharmacies, and many of the doctors have been lied to. And statistics, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Raskin, but many doctors, physicians have been presented with large paychecks to deliver a speech about a certain drug. And so that has exacerbated it. Now that is blessedly coming to an end, as far as I understand.
Well, yeah, when I was prescribed OxyContin, by the way, they told me, Todd, this is super, it's an excellent pain reliever. And by the way, it is not addictive.
Right.
That's what you were told, non addictive?
Non addictive, because this is like in 1998.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, and again, as a psychologist, I've heard so many patients say stuff like that, is that they thought because their doctor was prescribing it, that it must be a safe drug.
Yeah.
Listen, Mark, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. That's great insight. And maybe
one final quick comment? Yeah, just from my business, I've had personal contact with politicians here in L.A. County. And the only thing I would say to Dr. Raskin, and I do agree, I mean, there's a lot of things blowing in the wind against, unfortunately, these life-saving ideas you're all talking about. But I would say from politicians, I've had first-hand knowledge of talking to them, never give up because things can change. I mean, it took a long time, but women finally got to vote, which was disgusting that they couldn't in the first place. But I just want to leave you with that one.
I appreciate that.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it starts, well, in a small way, we're trying to do it right here on the show.
Absolutely.
We're trying to introduce dialogue and take it away and bring this subject into the forefront as not something that should be punished. I think we all agree about that, but that's something that should be treated.
Yeah, it's the elephant in the room. We're now talking about it finally.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
So tell me again about – I know you had a film. Share a little bit about your film and how it came about, because it's so important that you found the medium to be able to express yourself and express your story, because it's an amazing film and it can help so many people out there.
Well, thank you. The film is called The Long Way Back, and it's the story of Todd Z. Manzalkins. It's been my nickname since I was a kid. It's on Hulu, Amazon, and Google Play. It essentially it covers my 17-year addiction to – prescription opioids, what it did to me, what it took to get well. And Dr. Daniel Hedrick, who's a renowned addiction medicine doctor down in Laguna Beach, was quoted as saying it's the worst case he'd ever seen. Not that I wear that as a plaque or something cool, because there's nothing cool about it. But
give us an example of what the worst case would look like.
Well, for me, if you'd have seen me about 7 months sober, you thought I was still having a stroke. I constantly shook. I didn't sleep for my first 44 days of recovery. I was in a constant state of just such discomfort that my right side constantly – you'd be like, what the hell – what's wrong with this guy? He can't even sit still, and his whole body shakes. And so the half-life of these opioids, they last a long time. And when you're taking 2,400 micrograms of fentanyl and 16 to 18 80 milligram OxyContins a day for several years, it's going to get you a detox that's just straight from hell.
Right. Give
it's true. Well, people don't realize that there's an initial detox, but then there's also a phase later on that can go on and on. It's called post-acute withdrawals, and it can last for months, and people don't realize that. And I just think that that's an important thing that people need to realize, that there is a very medically associated issue with coming off of these drugs, and you need to get the right type of help, to see the right type of physicians.
I'm glad you brought that up. I have to jump in really quick, because the post-acute withdrawal symptoms or syndrome, for me, it lasted almost 15 months.
Yeah.
And so for people who go into treatment 30, 60 days, who have been on this stuff for a decade, especially if you mix in benzodiazepines.
Oh, that's a whole different story.
The sinister nature of it just is through the roof. So the person is going to be completely agitated and going through a state of flux physically, emotionally, psychologically for a long time.
And I want to add that, this is where people like Dr. Irwin and myself come in too, because once someone has finished the medical detox and is a place where they can start processing and trying to understand how they may have gotten into this mess psychologically to start off with, I also have that same kind of reaction. People will come to me and go, okay, I want to do 2 weeks of therapy and I want to see you twice a week and I want to understand and be able to, you know, get to the other side of this. And they'll sometimes ask me, well, how long do you think it'll take? And I go, I don't know, 5-10 years. And they laugh. And
but you weren't being funny.
I wasn't being funny at all. And I was thinking about what Dr. Bluthenthal said too, that just like an incarceration can affect the whole family, treatment also, a lot of times, you have to bring in the whole family, too.
I want to say one more thing. It's such a brain disease, too. I actually had images from the Amen Clinic 4 months prior to my going into treatment. Before and after, 10 years later, the brain absolutely can heal. The elasticity.
Yeah.
I had holes in my brain that were smoothed over, and I could not believe the evidence that we saw before and after, you know, 10 years sobriety. But thank God that I was able to see that. And it's just a lot of people don't understand that a lot of healing needs to take place physically.
And a lot of healing has to take place psychologically, that a lot of times I may ask people, the company that I work with, Concierge Detox, we try to set up a whole program for people because there's a lot of craziness the first couple of years, and you need to have a professional who's around to be able to understand that and tolerate that. I see you nodding your head, Dr. Irwin.
Well, yeah, just what you alluded to earlier, people want it to be really quick. We don't have magic wands.
Right.
We wish we could get people out of pain that quickly, but it is a process. And so we want to make sure that they have a good support system, and whether that includes a 12-step program for support or, you know, their health maintenance and continuing therapy long after they leave us, when they check out of rehab, that's just a beginning. They're not coming there to completely get cured or heal. It's a beginning. And so we set them up so they know what to expect to deal with you know, the long.
And a lot of times people have to recreate their lives. They've destroyed their lives so much that mm-hmm. it takes years to try to change it, correct it, set some goals.
You know, it's kind of like I look at being new in recovery as being in a burn unit. You're badly, your skin, everything's coming alive and it's new again. Mm. And I'm talking about simple stuff like going to the supermarket, simple tasks. When you're sober, newly sober, life is, the world is so different around you. Mm. And it takes time to adjust.
And I wish the people that feel that this should be, the people should be incarcerated for drug addiction could come to our rehab centers, could visit people like you and just see what an incredible struggle it is that people are going through, that this is definitely a disease.
And Dr. Bluthenthal was correct that there are medications that can help people stay sober, especially for opioids. Mm-hmm. And I think that people know that. It's called medication-assisted therapy. You need medication along with therapy that can actually go to the core of helping people stay on the road to that journey of staying sober and clean.
We're going to stop for a commercial break in a moment. What I'm going to ask my panel when I come back is we've explored this topic a great deal. And in our last segment, we're going to try to offer some sort of solutions about how we can move forward from your own professional standpoint. So think about that at the commercials and we'll be right back. Our number to call in is 1-800-222-5222. And as I said, we'll be right back after the commercials.
You're listening to The Solution with Dr. G and Dr. Damon Raskin.
I'm Dr. G.
And I'm Dr. Raskin.
And we're here with a solution. If you want to call in to our final segment, the number is 1-800-222-5222. If you just tuned in, we've been discussing the question, should addicts be treated or punished? We have an expert panel. And in our last segment, we're going to talk about ideas about where we can move in the future. And as Todd shared at the break, I love the way he said it. We have to give people solutions and hope for the future. We may not have all the answers, but we definitely have to work towards them and, like you said, offer hope. So I'm going to start with Dr. Bluthenthal. Your thoughts from your own professional perspective about how we can move forward in this issue.
Well, I like what Dr. Irwin said about having a humanitarian approach to the topic. And the truth is the infrastructures we have that destroy the lives of people who misuse substances are far and away more profound than those that we have to help them. And when you think about, for instance, in my studies, and for 30 years I've followed the health problems of people who inject drugs, mostly heroin and meth users. At any given moment, there are way more people, for instance, having access to methadone through diversion rather than through treatment. And that's because we don't make treatment widely enough available. And even for treatment programs that exist, the majority of them don't make use of the medically assisted treatments, at least for the opiate use disorders. So I think we have to sort of lean into the problems, lean into people, give them more resources, not less, expand the availability of these medication treatments, but also the availability of all the other kinds of treatments that are out there. It's a complex disorder.
there really isn't any silver bullet for it, and we need to sort of bring all of our creativity and imagination to providing people with services that are going to help them live their best selves.
You know, that's exactly what we were talking about at the break, the idea that this is such a complex issue. And part of my frustrations as a psychologist sometimes is even from family members, people come in and just want to simplify something that is so complex. Or they'll say to me, you know, I've been using for 20 years and they want an answer in a week. And, you know, that is frustrating. So as we get into the solution, we're also getting into the complexity. Dr. Bluthenthal, if people wanted to find out more about your work or learn more about you, how could they do so?
They can just contact me. There's only one Ricky Bluthenthal on the planet.
Okay.
I'm a professor at USC, so feel free to look me up, Google me. You'll find me really easily.
And I want to thank you for that information. We'll get back to you in a moment. Dr. Raskin, your thoughts as a medical professional on the solution.
Well, a couple of thoughts. One is that I want people to realize that there is hope that, you know, even if you do commit a crime because you're trying to feed your addiction, maybe you're worried that the detox is going to be so horribly painful, that detox can be comfortable under the right circumstances, that there are physicians like myself, addiction specialists, that can help people detox from whatever drug as comfortable as possible in the right setting, as long as it's medically supervised. And there is hope. The other thought I had was that we can't just look at addiction as the problem. We also have to look at mental health. So if there is an underlying issue with depression or a generalized anxiety disorder or bipolar disorder, that has to be diagnosed, assessed, and treated properly. And you can't just treat the addiction. You have to look at both of those things. And there is hope and there is help for all of that.
And I think to get rid of some of the shame around it, too, when you understand that this is a disease like any other disease, like diabetes or
high blood pressure, heart disease, all of that. Absolutely.
This is not something you brought on or just your simple willpower is going to be able to change it.
This is not a character flaw.
Well, that's a great way to put it. So, Dr. Raskin, if people want to get in touch with you, how could they do so?
Well, I'm in private practice in Pacific Palisades. My office phone number is 310-459-4333. I also have a website that's DamonRaskinMD.com.
And I heard you have a company called Concierge Detox.
Concierge Detox LA. It's a great company. If patients with addiction issues want to be detoxed and treated in the privacy of their own home or in a hotel room, you and I can bring the rehab to them. Absolutely.
And I want to thank you for that insight. Dr. Irwin, your thoughts about how we're going to find a solution to this?
Yeah, easy question.
I know. Well, we're going to have about another six-hour show one day.
We're going to have to. I think we do need to start electing officials who have a heart and care about
this
issue. They may not have the answers themselves, but they're open to finding a panel of professionals such as we have here tonight, that it is expanded, and know that there's no cookie cutter formula for anyone. So it needs to be individualized. And I don't know, I mean, it worked in the 60s for 5 minutes before the funding was taken away. And that's when John Kennedy had the community health centers and something like that specifically for addictions. I mean, I'm just throwing out creative ideas here, but wouldn't that be wonderful?
I think it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
So Dr. Irwin, if people wanted to find out more about yourself or your book or Seasons Rehab Center, how could they do so?
Absolutely. SeasonsMalibu.com or DrNancyIrwin.com, or my private practice number is 310-235-2882. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. And I heard the accent just now a little bit.
Still there after all these years.
Where are you from?
Atlanta, originally.
Okay. And Todd, your thoughts, your solution.
Dr. Bluthenthal, he nailed it. I'm a huge advocate for more resources. And one of the most scary feelings as someone who has been through it is that sense of hopelessness that's immeasurable, absolutely immeasurable. And that the most heartbreaking thing that I personally go through as a family crisis interventionist, or when someone reaches out to me for or wants help, they are ready for help. And you just can't get them in anywhere. Either a lack of resources, either a whether it's financial, health insurance, et cetera, and the waiting list at Phoenix House and Redgate and all these places that offer care, they just can't get in. Sometimes they overdose and die. And so there needs to be more availability. I'm such a proponent for that, for people who truly have the willingness to make change. And that's what recovery is about. It's about changing and growing. And I'm a big fan of more resources.
Can I step in real quick?
Sure, absolutely.
So But it's also important to realize that at any given moment, most, and by most, I mean like 75-80% of the people who are misusing substances aren't going to be in treatment. They're not going to be in jail. And so we have to make sure that we have the full availability of harm reduction strategies, right. Things like syringe exchange programs, things like naloxone distribution for overdose reversal, things like potentially drug consumption sites where people can use in a safe, monitored environment. Because, you know, until we get to that moment where there is treatment on demand, there are going to be a whole lot of people needing a wide variety of services to stay healthy or as healthy as they can while they continue to use.
That's great insight, and I want to thank you again for sharing that. And Todd, if people wanted to find out more about your work or how they can view your film, how could they do so?
Well, thank you for asking that. You can go to my website, toddzalkins.com. That's Z-A-L-K-I-N-S, toddzalkins.com, or 888-604-7370. And the film is called The Long Way Back. It's on Hulu, Amazon, Google, iTunes, et cetera.
And again, Todd, as seeing the film, I just want to say what an amazing film it is and how brave it is for you to go out and share your story with everyone, and what an inspiration I know it will be to a lot of people. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you kindly for watching it. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You know, I don't know if I could say anything more than what everybody has said here, but we have 3 minutes left, so I'm going to just do this briefly. One of the things I found as someone who's worked a lot in this area is that treatment is so individualized, and a lot of times people will come to me and they want to start treatment, and I want to say to them, well, I know there are all these resources, and I'm not as I get to know you, I'm going to have a much better sense as I go through this journey of recovery with you what we're going to need. But to educate people that it's such an individualized journey for everyone, and you can't, it's not a cookie cutter formula. You have to be able, as like I know, I have to be able to go through that journey with someone. And a lot of times I may not know exactly what I'm going to need till I get to that place. And I try to explain that to people about how complex and how long it's going to take. So in addition to, you know, having those resources, helping people understand that treatment is complex. And the more we understand, the more research, like the research that Dr. Bluthenthal is doing, the more chance we're going to have to be able to have success. So we have 2 minutes left. I want to go around quickly to anyone. If there's a final thought you want to share with our audience, maybe something you've been holding on to so you don't walk out and say to me, you know, I really wanted to say this. Yes. Education.
We talked just for a quick second about prevention, education awareness for young people. And so my take is that we need to get to them at a younger age before high school, 11, 12, 13. And so for those of you listening or watching, go to higherground experience.com. It's an application that myself and some others are creating to help young people to understand the dangers and avoid the pitfalls of substance use and alcoholism. So check it out. I'm a huge believer in us getting to young people soon.
Absolutely. Dr. Raskin, I see you nodding your head.
The one thing that I also was thinking about is that there are these medications that can help people in terms of staying clean and staying sober, help curb cravings. But if you don't have health insurance, they can be very, very expensive. And we need more policy about ensuring that anyone who needs these type of medicines should have access to these medicines. So, for example, there's one thing you can do.
We're going to actually have to stop right now. But yeah. Access is so important.
It is.
Being able to give people access. I want to thank our panel for coming on. Todd Zeman-Zalkins, Dr. Nancy Irwin, Dr. Ricky N. Bluthenthal, and of course, Dr. Raskin. It's been a pleasure to have everyone on. I hope we've given our audience a little inspiration and a little glimpse into the solution. We'll be back next week.